the active shooter doctrine, how the Columbine aftermath affects black Americans. From the desk of Murdoch Sr. Esquire, the American justice system operates on a profound, deeply cynical paradox. The state maintains a near absolute monopoly on the legitimate use of physical violence. Yet, under the United States Constitution, the state bears absolutely no reciprocal duty to protect you from private harm. When you synthesize this lack of liability with the hyper-aggressive evolution of modern police tactics, you create a fatal trap. This report is an autopsy of how the active shooter doctrine devolved from a school safety protocol into a generalized license to kill. It is a legal breakdown of how the objective reasonableness standard shields these killings. Most importantly, it is an examination of how this tactical shift has effectively erased the Second Amendment rights of black Americans. Part 1. The illusion of state protection. To understand why police are shielded when they mistakenly kill an armed citizen, you must first understand the constitutional boundaries of municipal liability. The dominant jurisprudence of the United States Supreme Court conceptualizes the federal Constitution as a charter of negative liberties. It is a document that restricts state overreach but imposes absolutely no affirmative obligations on government actors to guarantee your safety. This negative constitution framework was solidified in DeShaney v. Winnebago County Department of Social Services, 1989. In this tragic case, a 2-year-old boy named Joshua DeShaney was systematically beaten into a permanent coma by his father, despite dozens of warnings and active documentation by county social workers. Chief Justice William Rehnquist wrote the opinion, holding that the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment is a limitation on the state's power to act. It is not a guarantee of minimal safety. The state has no constitutional duty to protect citizens from private violence. This terrifying doctrine was expanded directly to law enforcement in Town of Castle Rock, v. Gonzalez, 2005. Jessica Gonzalez possessed a formal restraining order mandating that local police arrest her estranged husband if he violated its terms. When he abducted her 3 daughters, she pleaded with the police 9 separate times to enforce the order. The police refused to act. Her husband murdered all 3 children. The Supreme Court ruled 7-2 against Gonzalez. Justice Antonin Scalia asserted that even when statutory language appears mandatory, police officers retain a deeply rooted discretionary authority to determine when and how to enforce the law. Here are the landmark cases establishing this framework. Case: DeShaney v. Winnebago, 1989. Constitutional basis, 14th Amendment. Core legal ruling: the state has no affirmative duty to protect citizens from private violence. Case: Castle Rock v. Gonzalez, 2005. Constitutional basis, 14th Amendment and 42 U.S.C., Section 1983. Core legal ruling: mandatory language in restraining orders does not create a right to police enforcement. Case: United States v. Morrison, 2000. Core legal ruling: forecloses federal civil rights claims for victims of gender-motivated private violence. This jurisprudence completely severs the social contract. If the state refuses to protect its citizens, private citizens are driven toward armed self-defense. But as we will see, defending yourself is exactly what gets you killed. Part 2: The perversion of active shooter protocols. The tactical environment of American policing fundamentally ruptured on April 20, 1999, during the Columbine High School massacre. Prior to Columbine, law enforcement utilized a contain-and-wait model. Arriving patrol officers established secure perimeters, gathered intelligence, and waited for specialized SWAT units. During Columbine, this doctrine failed spectacularly. While officers held the perimeter, the shooters systematically murdered 12 students and a teacher. This failure birthed immediate action, rapid deployment. Responding officers are now trained under the premise that an active shooter kills a victim every 15 seconds. The doctrine mandates that patrol officers form small contact teams, bypass the wounded, and aggressively push forward to neutralize the threat. While IARD was conceived to address mass casualties in confined environments, the doctrine has been systematically expanded to encompass any publicly accessible area. In this transition, the rules of engagement underwent a dangerous perversion. Modern guidelines encourage officers to make contact prior to an armed individual actually becoming an active shooter. This preemptive mandate authorizes patrol officers to immediately deploy lethal force against any individual holding a handgun who might be perceived as threatening. Part 3. The Graham Shield and the Science of Mistakes. This Shoot First protocol operates under the protective legal umbrella of the Fourth Amendment. In Graham v. Connor, 1989, the Supreme Court established the objective reasonableness standard. The court ruled that an officer's subjective good faith or malicious intent is irrelevant. The sole question is whether the officer's actions were objectively reasonable given the perceived facts, allowing for the tense, uncertain, and rapidly evolving nature of police encounters. While courts defer heavily to these split-second judgments, empirical research proves these judgments are highly susceptible to cognitive errors. A landmark study by Dr. Paul Taylor at the University of Colorado, Denver, examined how 911 dispatch information influences an officer's decision to use deadly force. Dr. Taylor armed law enforcement officers with laser guns and exposed them to video simulations where a subject rapidly draws a cell phone. The baseline group was told it was a potential trespass. They had a very low error rate. The phone group was told the subject appeared to be talking on a phone. Only 6% shot the unarmed subject. The gun group was told the subject appeared to be holding a gun. 62% of officers shot the unarmed subject. This massive perception error is driven by confirmation bias. When officers are primed by a dispatch call of shots fired, they interpret benign physical cues through a lethal lens. Under IARD protocols, they enter anticipating immediate combat. Any citizen holding a handgun for self-defense is almost certain to be perceived as an active threat, and the resulting execution will be legally protected as a reasonable mistake. Part 4. The Fatal Erasure of Black Second Amendment Rights. This preemptive violence falls with crushing weight on Black Americans. Historically, the right to keep and bear arms has functioned as an exclusive white privilege, from the Black Codes to modern concealed carry enforcement. Sociological research, including the first-person shooter task, demonstrates that participants shoot armed Black targets faster and more frequently than armed white targets. This dynamic is driven by stereotypes that associate Black men with inherent violence, creating a deficit of credibility where a Black man's actions are instantly interpreted as hostile. The real-world application of this legal and tactical paradigm is illustrated by a series of high-profile tragedies where the state executed the very people trying to stop a massacre. Case 1, Emantic E.J. Bradford Jr., 2018. On Thanksgiving night at an Alabama mall, gunfire erupted. Bradford, a Black legal gun owner, drew his weapon and began directing terrified shoppers to safety. Officer David Alexander saw Bradford running with a drawn handgun near the victims. Without issuing a single verbal command, Alexander shot Bradford in the face and back. A federal judge granted the officer qualified immunity, ruling it was reasonable to assume Bradford was the active shooter. Case 2, Jamel Roberson, 2018. Roberson, a Black security guard, successfully subdued an active shooter outside an Illinois bar, pinning him to the ground. Responding officer Ian Covey arrived. Despite bystanders screaming that Roberson was a security guard, Covey observed a man holding a firearm and shot Roberson 4 times in the back. prosecutors declined to file criminal charges, ruling the use of force was objectively reasonable in a chaotic environment. Case 3, Johnny Hurley, 2021. Hurley, a white legal gun owner in Colorado, shot and killed an active shooter who had just murdered a police officer. Hurley picked up the suspect's AR-15 to secure it. A responding officer arrived, saw Hurley holding the rifle, and killed him instantly without warning. No criminal charges were filed. Case 4, Martinez v. Hinojosa, 2026. Jorge Martinez heroically disarmed an active shooter inside his own home. He walked outside naked, holding the disabled rifle, shouting that he was not the shooter to signal compliance. Officer Hinojosa, positioned 60 yards away, shot Martinez in the abdomen. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the mistaken. Identity shooting was objectively reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. For black citizens, a handgun is not viewed by the state as a constitutional shield. It is viewed as a death warrant that instantly immunizes the responding officer who pulls the trigger. Part V. Restoring the Scales of Justice. The perversion of the active shooter doctrine has created a critical crisis of constitutional rights. Shielded by the highly deferential Graham standard, police officers are routinely cleared of civil and criminal liability when they execute legal gun owners and Good Samaritans. To dismantle this lethal paradigm, comprehensive reform must be enacted immediately. Step 1. Reconceptualizing objective reasonableness. The judiciary must actively narrow the application of Graham v. Connor. Courts should establish that a mistaken identity shooting of an armed citizen is presumptively unreasonable if the officer failed to issue a verbal warning when feasible. Threat perception cannot be legally justified solely by a generalized active shooter dispatch. It must require a specific, localized threat posed by the victim. Furthermore, the doctrine of qualified immunity must be severely curtailed to allow citizens to seek civil remedies. Step 2. Emphasizing positive threat identification. Law enforcement agencies, while rapid engagement of an active threat remains necessary, training must prioritize positive threat identification over uncoordinated force. Officers must be trained in scenario-based simulations to differentiate between an active assailant and an armed citizen holding a weapon in a defensive posture. Step 3. Reforming dispatch protocols. Because dispatch information heavily dictates an officer's cognitive frame, municipalities must implement rigorous training for 911 dispatch operators. Information regarding the presence of weapons must be highly verified and contextual. Dispatchers must actively query callers to differentiate between an active assailant and a defensive legal gun owner, transmitting this critical distinction to responding units to decompress their initial threat expectations. Conclusion. The law is supposed to be our steadying hand in the dark, but when the state tells you it has no duty to protect your family and then executes you for daring to protect them yourself, the law becomes nothing more than a predator's shield. We cannot allow the trauma of past massacres to rewrite the rules of engagement for our neighborhoods. The Second Amendment cannot exist solely as a privilege for the few while operating as a fatal trap for the marginalized. We must demand that our police departments tighten their protocols and that our courts remove the blindfolds of qualified immunity. Justice requires precision. Once we let panic and bias dictate who gets to live and who gets to die, we are entirely lost in the dark. From the desk of Murdoch Sr. Esquire.